Podcasting from the beautiful San Francisco Bay Area in California, this is Venus Rising, where we discuss all things related to big fertility and encourage you to think beyond the masses. I'm Callie Fell, your host, bringing you the best and most up-to-date conversations on fertility, infertility, and women's reproductive health. Hello, and welcome back to Venus Rising. I'm your host, Callie Fell. I am really excited to welcome our next guest, Liz, social scientist and donor-conceived person, to the show today. She earned her PhD in social personality psychology from the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign in 2021. And since then, she's been assistant professor of psychology and sociology at California North State University. In addition to her research on attachment in donor conception, Liz recently founded a startup called Conception Connection, which seeks to empower donor-conceived or DC people by helping them with identity-related challenges and relationship building. So without further ado, we'll welcome Liz to the show.
Thank you for having me, Callie. I appreciate it.
Of course. We this season are having a lot of folks who are donor conceived on the show. Seems to be kind of our theme this season. And so you are among many who are going to be speaking with us, but very unique in that your studies really, it seems like anyway, your personal experience impacted your studies and your career and now your startup. Before we get to that, first off, like, what is a social scientist?
Yeah, so a lot of people aren't really familiar with the term, like social scientist, right? So it's basically just somebody who studies like social interactions and close relationships. So I kind of describe it as being like really good at people watching. It was fun. I think that that's what like drove me to like studying, you know, social psychology and really understanding like people at a deep level, right? It was like I was always that type of person that just really was like deeply trying to understand like human behavior, right? What are our thought patterns, our emotions, and our behavior? So yeah, that's what drove me to study social psychology.
Okay. And I want to talk about your research and your profession, but let's maybe start with, because it does seem like they're intertwined a little bit. Let's start with your personal story as it relates to donor conception.
Yeah. So I have a bit of a different story. A lot of people that are donor conceived in this space, they actually, you know, were never told, right? They find out through a surprise, you know, through 23andMe, something like that. But I was actually very different. So my parents told me at a very young age. So I remember I was probably like 5 years old, like very young at the time. And my mom told me, you know, I'm your biological parent, you know, but your dad, he's not genetically related to you. And I just remember being like so fascinated, very confused, but like really trying make sense of everything. Like, okay, so we're not genetically related, but he's my dad. Mm-hmm. So yeah, there were lots of questions, I think, in the early stages, like really trying to put the pieces of the puzzle together to like make sense of like who I am and like where I come from. So yeah.
Well, and I mean, five is really young. I mean, I have a daughter who's almost a year and a half, and she still is piecing it together. Like, she'll point to her dad and be like, dada, mama, you know? So, you know, I can't imagine at five even understanding, okay, so what's genetics have to do with it? Like, what does even that mean? Or, and I'm sure your mom did an excellent job of kind of sharing that with you. And then did she kind of, and your mom and dad, did they kind of continue to reiterate that? Or how was that?
Yeah, it wasn't really discussed at like, you know, at length, you know, it was kind of just conversations here and there, you know, throughout the years. But I still remember like it was yesterday when I was in second grade, we had this like activity where I had to come home and do like a family tree. And I just remember asking so many questions. My poor mom probably had to answer so many questions that it might have been uncomfortable, you know, to really talk about. And I said, okay, well, who do I use in this family tree? Do I use dad, you know, or my biological parent, like the donor, you know? And she was really good about trying to like answer those questions. But I don't think that I actually rested after doing that assignment. I think that I was like really perplexed. And I was like, okay, well, it opened up all the can of worms. Like, I really wanted to understand like, well, who is this person? And like, why am I the way that I am? So I think it opened up a lot of questions, like after doing that assignment.
Yeah. And in second grade. So can you tell us a little bit more then about how it's impacted like the rest of your life? Like, have you, Do you feel like your relationship with your dad is different? Have you found or do you know your biological donor? And then, you know, how has that, I've spoken to many who have the same kind of bewilderment that kids who are adopted have. Do you feel like you experienced that? Do you think that your mom telling you at such a young age helped? Kind of talk us through how this impacted you.
Yeah, I definitely think that it helped, right? Having that disclosure and having that transparency, I really feel like that's important. And even the research like highlights, right, the importance of like telling kids like from an early stage, you know? So I'm very thankful that my parents did that. So that way I would know, okay, well, I do have a donor. But at the same time, I feel like it just, you know, left me like with all these question, you know, all these question marks of like, well, who is this person? And like, who am I, right, in relation to my family? I'm very different from my parents. Like, you know, we're very different personalities. So I think growing up, I really struggled with that. You know, well, why am I so fundamentally different from the people that are raising me? And I think that that's why I was like so curious from an early age, you know, who is this donor? Who is this person? And luckily I figured out who it was. So I think it was like in 2019, I discovered the identity of the donor. Unfortunately, he doesn't want to have a relationship. But I totally respect that. You know, I understand that people essentially, you know, have these, you know, they have families of their own and it's difficult, right, to incorporate, you know, somebody that you're biologically related to, like into that family dynamic, you know? Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was a roller coaster. I remember like really struggling with that because I wanted to have not just medical information, you know, but to like ask a bunch of questions to really get a sense of like who he is, like why he donated, all of those types of questions. But yeah, it was crazy. 6 months after I actually figured out his identity, I discovered a half sister. So my whole life, I was an only child. And then lo and behold, I'm like, oh, well, I actually do have, you know, a sibling. So yeah, it's great. We actually have conversations here and there and like have a pretty good relationship. So it's been a positive experience, you know, despite like all the highs and lows. I feel like I'm lucky to, you know, have like this life and to have like these relationships in my life.
And so were you able to, did the donor disclose the medical information that you were seeking to find so that you could understand your medical risks and health history?
Unfortunately, I didn't receive that information. And the good thing though, is that I did 23andMe and I found out that I actually do have a genetic variant. So another complicated factor is that like I carry the BRCA one, you know, gene. So I didn't know that, but luckily I did 23andMe and my half sister did. So we were able to determine, right, that we carry this like high risk. And then with that, we can do like, you know, 6 month screenings, all of that. But it's a huge issue in this, you know, field, right, is that people aren't getting the health information that they actually need, right, to be proactive and to have like be in good health. So I could go off on a whole tangent about that, but
no, please do. Actually, I would love for you to, if you want to take a moment and talk more about that, because I don't think people realize that that's a big part of this. And, you know, anonymity is out the window now with like 23andMe and all of those things. But really, we still kind of sell it as that, like you're anonymous and the damage that that can do to people to not know who what their biological origins are. So yes, go ahead, go off on a tangent. I would appreciate that.
I'm a professor, so you can ask my students. I go off on many tangents.
I love it.
Yeah. But no, I feel very strongly about this, that a lot of the people who donate, right, they just think, okay, this is a one-time, you know, instance, and I'm basically helping to create life. But it's so much more than that, in my opinion. You know, as a like psychologist, you know, that child is going to grow up most likely, and they're going to have questions, not even just like pertaining to their health, but they're going to want to know who you are, right? And what makes them them, right? So I always say that like the donor, I'm going to ruffle some feathers, but the donor is definitely, you know, more than just like a genetic contributor, right? They are actually a parent, you know, in some sense. They're not like raising the child, but they definitely are, right? A parent in some capacity. So I think it's really important that people realize that, you know, and it's not just health implications, although that's a huge thing. Like everyone, right, is entitled to understanding their health history. Right? Health is so important nowadays. So it's important that people have that at the bare, you know, a bare essential, the bare foundation. But it's so much more than just health, history and health.
Well, and it's crazy that in the United States and other places, that's not a given. Like there's no right to know that information as a donor conceived person, which baffles me. But you're right. There's so much more to that. I think it was our interview in season two with Nick, who's donor conceived, and how, and there are others who have shared the same sentiment, how they don't really fit in maybe with their parents, and they, maybe their parents are really artistic and they have this like engineering brain, and then they meet or they are able to connect with their donor, and they find out, oh my goodness, they are also into engineering or medicine. You know, there's some sort of connection there, and it kind of fits a piece that was missing. And so that's just, it's more than that. Yeah.
Yeah. I can relate to that because when I met my half sister, it was kind of like an awkward first date a little bit at first. But I always describe it that way. But it was like I could see my quirks, right? Like in her and like vice versa. So it was really interesting to see that even though we lived in two different places, right? We had these two different life experiences, we actually are both like researchers, right? We're both scientists. Oh, wow. That to me is really interesting that we have that because my parents, you know, don't have that, you know, in terms of career or mindset. So really different and really interesting that we have that commonality. So
yeah, that is. That's really. It kind of, it sounds like a science experiment a little bit though, you know, like, and that kind of, that breaks my heart to know that kids are kind of signed up for this without knowing and without, you know, how can you get a piece of permission, but you know what I'm saying? Like, but that's great that you were able to connect with, a half sister. Do you think that you have, more siblings?
Oh, I do. I definitely believe that. Future, we'll probably figure out like who those people are. But now, you know, it's just an open question. Like each day I'm like, oh, will I find a new sibling? You never know.
Yeah. So. And are you using an online tool to kind of connect you like most do with like 23andMe or?
I'm like registered with all of those.
All of them.
I'm like just waiting every day. Okay. Is there a new half sibling? So.
Yeah. Yeah. So then let's talk now. Let's switch a little bit to your research on attachment and donor conception. So what can you tell us about your research? What are you finding? Is it published? Where can people find it? Let's dive in.
Yeah, so I am published in different outlets. So it's like Personal Relationships, Fertility and Sterility. So there's some different journals that I'm in. So yeah, people could find the work. Although that's the thing though, it's like very hard to like the jargon. There's a lot of complicated, complex terms. So yeah, with science, it's like really important to like, you know, communicate the findings in like simple ways so like people understand. But yeah, so basically I study donor conception and attachment. So it's how people approach their close relationships, like with their parents, and how does that actually predict, right, people's behavior in the context of donor conception. So one thing that I've studied in the past is curiosity. So are people, based on their attachment style, are they more likely to be curious about who the donor is? Right. And curious about their biological underpinnings. And then also, are they more likely to search for the donor and also establish contact with that person? And this was just a one, you know, shot study, like a cross-sectional at one time point. So we don't know, right? This isn't something that was reproduced. But in that initial study, I found out that people who are anxious with respect to their attachment, so these are people who tend to be like preoccupied about their relationships. They kind of cling on sometimes to the people who are like near and dear to them, but they tend to be more curious about their donor conception. But at the same time, they actually were not more likely to search for their donor or like actually reach out and establish contact. So we don't know why that's the case, but it seems to be that it could be the fact that, you know, they're very, you know, trying to understand like who that person is. But they don't reach out because they're maybe afraid, right? Mm-hmm. There could be some fear operating where they're like, oh, I would love to know, like, you know, aspects about myself in relation to this person, but what happens if they reject me, right? Mm-hmm. I think that's a hard thing for a lot of people who are in the space, right? Yeah. They do know more about themselves, but they're also like, you know, they hold themselves back in fear of the outcome.
And what else are you finding? Is there a group that is more likely to seek out
So we haven't found that. We haven't found that yet, but I would imagine my hypothesis has always been that people who are more like securely attached, right? So they basically have like very strong like relationships. They kind of have like, think of it as like a security net, right? Like a safe haven where they can actually go out and seek those relationships. The parents, right, who raised them are going to be supportive of that endeavor. And, you know, just they're going to know that they have somebody to kind of like fall back on and rely on for support.
Right. So, like their mom and dad, they're not going anywhere. The people who raised them are there. They're going to help them through this. Sure. So have you, so this was like a one-time study, but I'm sure you've, in your research, you are studying research that's already been done in this field. Yeah. And did you find anything when you were doing that research that really shocked you, or that you feel like the general public needs to know more about? Because you're right. General public, they're not getting on Google Scholar. They're not getting a Fert and Sert. That's what I call Fertility and Sert. They're not getting that magazine delivered whenever. So yeah. What kind of studies would you want the population to know about regarding people who are donor conceived or relationships?
Well, it's very limited, right? There's the paywall, all of these different like obstacles for people actually getting that information. So it's a whole nother right. story. But yeah, there's a lot of good research out, you know, in this field. The only issue that is no one really looks at it longitudinally. There are like over time, there are studies that are being done now where it's looking at the effects of this like over the long term. So I'm really glad that we have researchers in this like field who are doing that work. But a lot of it too is like limited by like small sample sizes. So, you know, you really can't do a study with like 40 people and then make these like generalizations right. saying, oh yeah, this is how it operates, right? You need to have like a representative sample of like enough people, right? To then make those claims. So yeah, although it's really great that there's, you know, more research being done in this field, it is sometimes limited, right? By funding, all of these different culprits, right? But funding, time, things like that.
How many donor conceived people do you know are in like the United States? So do we have a figure on that?
No. So I actually worked with a team, you know, one of my collaborators to do this research to kind of see like based on, you know, this panel data, do we know how many people exist? And we actually don't. Right. There's like rough figures, but even those, there's like very wide confidence intervals. So I wouldn't actually want to put a set number to it because we don't know. So
a lot, we just did a big surrogacy research study, and it's interesting. Whenever we go talk about third party reproduction, people want to know numbers. That's like something they're really passionate about. And it's like, I have absolutely no numbers to give you because we don't track this very well.
No, we don't.
Which is insane because of the medical records that we keep of people. But yet we don't find it important to track people who've been surrogate mothers, donor conceived, people who've, egg donation. We were talking in your case, sperm donation, which is pretty minimal risk to the gentleman who's donating a sample. But on the opposite spectrum is an egg donor, which can be incredibly risky and can have a lot of health risks for the donor. And so we're not tracking those women to see cancer risks later in life, that sort of thing. And something I'm finding too, that research is starting, and I would like your comment on this, research is starting to kind of look also at the health a little bit of donor conceived people. Just the whole, does the process of being donor conceived have any implications for your health grow as you age? Do you have any comments on that?
Yeah, well, again, it kind of like suffers from those same limitations that we're talking about. So we don't really know the entire like, you know, big picture. But there is some research. So it's kind of mixed. There is some research to suggest, right? There's some psychological effects that are happening. And again, a lot of these, you know, things with mental illness, right? There is a biological component to a lot of disorders, right? So again, if people don't know and they don't have that health information, right? You don't know if you're at a like a greater increased risk, right? Of having some propensity for a mental health disorder. So yeah, again, there needs to be like more accurate records and like regulation of this. So people actually have that information, right? And they know like, is this going to potentially impact, right? Like my health, my psychological well-being, like all of these things.
Yeah. Besides regulation and tracking this, is there anything else that you would really like to see change, especially in the United States, as it pertains to third party reproduction to protect children and protect families?
Yeah, I think there's so much. I think there's a lot of issues like in this field, but I would definitely say that it's a lot of it is connection, right? I wish that I would have had like more connection, like from the beginning of this, like being 5 years old, not really understanding what all of this meant. I would have definitely benefited, right? By having like consistent support. And I think the more that I've thought about this and whatnot, it's more than just having a therapist, right? It's somebody who actually has lived experience and they totally understand, right? They may have a different, you know, experience, but they understand, like, by virtue of being donor conceived, what you're going through, how you're feeling. So yeah, I definitely think there needs to be a space, right, where people can actually have these conversations and have like an open, transparent dialogue, right? Somewhere where they actually feel the support, they feel that connection, right? Somebody who understands like what they're going through.
Which is a great segue into that, sounds like a little bit of what your startup is. So let's talk about that. When did you come up with this idea? Where are you at in the process, and what's the goal of your startup?
Yeah. So it's kind of still like in the process, right? I'm in the process of trying to like get clients to like help serve. So it's very challenging sometimes, right? Also working full time. So devoting time to it. But yeah, essentially Conception Connection, it's my little baby, but essentially I'm trying to help people right in this space. So really helping them like make sense, right, of identity related challenges. So anytime that they just, you know, inadvertently, right, discover that they're donor conceived, right? Like my team, right, of experts and myself would help them, right, like work through these challenges, right, through like one-on-one consultations. We would be providing like resources and like a one-stop shop where they have like access to all of these different like awesome resources, right, available to them. And also too, I've developed like a program. So it's like a 4-week program where people can actually get the support, right? If they don't want to do one-on-one consultation, they could kind of be in like a team setting kind of thing. Therapy, where they, you know, they're going to be surrounded by people who understand, right, what they're going through. And together, right, there's going to be like some resources and some, you know, like a, kind of like a workshop where people can work through these challenges, right, like in a team setting. So
is it geared more towards adults, or is it open to any age?
Yeah. So right now it's like catered towards adults, right? Because developmentally speaking, that's a lot to take into account. Sure. There's lots of changes like throughout the year. So right now it's catered towards adults. So like anybody 18 or plus. But my goal is that in the future, I can extend this to like younger, you know, individuals, and also donor conceived families, right? Not just the people who are like impacted by it with their lives, but the family as well. So,
So it sounds like, two, this is like a great program for someone who's an adult and finds out later in life that they've been donor conceived. Do you find that that is, in your experience, and this might be more anecdotal, but do you find that generally people find out later in life that they were donor conceived, and it's your story is more unusual?
Yeah, I definitely feel like an outlier in lots of ways, because all the participants that I've, you know, spoken to, and just like other experiences, it tends to be the case, right? I don't want to make a causal claim and say, yes, it's usually
right. No, for sure. For sure.
Yeah. But definitely though, I definitely see a trend where people are finding out later in life. So a lot of that boils down to the parents being afraid, right? To like mention, hey, we actually, you know, used a donor, right? To like have you. And I think that people think it's going to disrupt the family, right? They want to keep it under the carpet, or keep it under the rug in fear, right? That it's going to create like some chaos in the family. But really, when you think about it, that's only damaging things, right? If you want to have a secure relationship with your kids, it's really important to disclose and say that, right? Because in the future, they might be curious, they might find out, and then what will happen, right, to the family dynamic. So I think it does a lot of damage by not actually telling and being like straightforward from the beginning.
So can people find your startup now, or is it still kind of underground, still in the developmental stages?
It's live. So basically we have a website and everything. But again, I don't have clients just yet, but really looking forward to like actually serving the community and like hoping to really create like a very safe space where people actually talk about these issues, right? And have that consistent, available support to them.
And can they find that on your personal website, which I'll disclose at the end, the Elizabeth, and I'm going to butcher this part, Lozano?
It is.
Okay. Yeah. I'll spell that out, but is that where we can find it, or is there a specific, is there another website for Conception Connection?
It's conceptionconnection.co. So not com, .co.
Okay.
Website.
Great. Great. And we'll include that for everyone who's listening in the description and stuff. So you can click on it and find that if you're interested. So what would you say then to a woman or man or couple looking to use a donor to start their family?
Oh, I would say so much. I would want to have like a session with them to like talk about all the implications.
Okay. So give us maybe like three most important things you would say to them that are the most important.
The biggest thing, like not even three, but like the biggest thing would essentially be the donor is a parent, right? I know that's going to ruffle feathers again, but I would definitely say that, right? They're more than just a genetic contributor. They're actually a parent, and the child might exhibit some curiosity. It doesn't make you any less of a parent. It doesn't mean that your child loves you, right? Any less. They're just kids, and kids actually have a lot of curiosity, and it's okay, right? So allow them to explore, allow them to, right, seek out, right, that donor on some level, right? Trying to have access to that individual, not just health-wise, but also to ask questions, right? To like really get a sense of like who they are, right? And make sense of their identity. So I would say like first and foremost, you know, this donor is not just a donor, right? And I think with that too comes the language and trying to describe that person. It's like hugely contested too in the research with this. It's like, how do you even describe and talk about the donor? But yeah, don't refer them to them as like a vial, right? Or an instrument of like having that child. They're a human being, right? They have thoughts and feelings of their own, and your child is going to have thoughts and feelings, right, pertaining to them. And it's okay. It's okay for that to happen.
Well, and we are critical of third-party reproduction. That is one part of our mission here at the CBC is education on this topic. And I would push back to that. Every child has a right to know their origins, and that's a right for a child to know those things. So I agree with you there. So what would you say then to a man or a woman who's thinking about being an egg donor?
Yeah, I would say it's more than just, you know, contributing, right? Like you really have to think about, even if you want to remain anonymous, which I would definitely say, please don't do that. In today's world, they will find you, right, at some point, and you shouldn't remain anonymous, right? This kid really needs to know who you are. But I would say you're more than just creating life. This is a human being, right, who's going to have thoughts, feelings, and you're going to want to understand like you, right? So I think it's really important that people realize you're not just doing this at one time point and then you can just forget about it. It will probably come up to the surface at some point and you need to be prepared, right? Like, are you actually ready to be a parent in some sense, right? Are you willing to like provide access to you, right? So that way the child has that. It's really important.
Well, and I think about donors are typically young, right? Because they're super healthy. They're targeted a little bit for the financial incentive that comes with becoming a donor. And so, yeah, I think sometimes, I wonder, are we in the right headspace to really think about the implications of donating? At the time, it's just a gamete. It's just an egg or a sperm. But eventually, the goal of third-party reproduction is to make that into a child, a person with their own rights and dignity, et cetera. So,
and I don't think people realize that, you know, I think that they're just donating for like, you know, whatever reason, like maybe it's finances, you know, but it's so much more than that. You're making a human life. It's a human being.
I have another question, actually. I was thinking while we were talking about just like the name and the language, birth certificates are I'm kind of following how states are navigating this. And it seems like we're just putting whoever on a birth certificate. It doesn't really matter. So what's your thought on that? Do you think that donors should have to go on a birth certificate?
I do. I think that it's so important to actually have that name there as like proof of like, this is the person, you know? So yeah, I definitely take that standpoint of like, all the things should be lined up with that. Yeah. Right? Just like they are the parent. It's not just genetic, you know, material. You are a parent. So.
Right. Right. Well, and the birth certificate is supposed to be more than just like an ownership receipt. You know, it's supposed to be a history of your origins, you know? And so, yeah, I agree.
It's so much easier for people to have that information, right? Like readily at their disposal. So.
Right. So I know a lot of folks, probably yourself included, are advocating for more oversight, more regulation. Personally, I don't think there can be enough oversight or regulation to make this safe and ethical for men, women, and children. But what do you think that are you hopeful, I guess, in the fertility industry and where we're headed? And do you think that more regulation can kind of amend some of the problems that we have or see? And do you think that the fertility industry, as it relates to donor conception, will improve? Or what's your outlook?
Yeah, I'm always hopeful. I live in an idealistic world where like things can be better, but I also know I see the limitations, right? In like my everyday, my own accounts and personal experiences and that of my participants, right? When I speak to them. So yeah, I feel like, you know, being idealistic, it's kind of like gone. It's been limited throughout the years. So I don't really believe, right, that over time things will improve. I want to believe that with more accurate record keeping, having like better records, you know, the birth certificates, for instance, that things will improve, they will get better. But there's just so many issues, right, pertaining to this. So I really don't think that over time it will get better. I want to believe that will be the case, but yeah.
What do you think is the biggest issue?
I think it's really transparency. So I can give an example. So I remember when I was like initially trying to understand like, you know, more about myself, I called up the fertility clinic in Boston, like that my parents had used. And they told me so many different things. First, I heard that there was a fire. And then the second time I had called, like there was like a supposedly a flood. Right. So they didn't have the record. So every single time, and this is other people have encountered this as well. There's always a new story. So at the very least, like not even having records, right? Like you're a donor conceived person, you're trying to understand and you call and you can't even get the records of like your birth, right? And like your, you know, your mom having artificial insemination. So to me, that's just so wild and crazy to think about that there's no record that my mom even went to this fertility clinic and had this.
Wow. And lied to. I mean, let's be honest, like they just blatantly lied to you because in no way was there a flood and a fire
or either things were happening. Yeah. So I obviously like cast a lot of doubt on that. And then I think they just didn't want to talk to me anymore, which, you know, I had a lot of questions. So understandably so, they didn't have answers for me or the correct answers. So
it seems like the fertility industry really is interested in profits and not so interested in helping families, especially after once there's a baby and there's, you know, they grow up and they want to know what's going on.
Yeah. It's not focused on the people, the very people that it's actually affecting. And like one example of that too, that I think about it now is the journals. So, you know, peer-reviewed, you know, journals that I actually publish in, I've realized like through doing this work, there actually isn't one that's devoted to the psychological effects of people who are donor conceived. It's all based on, you know, other factors, right? Like reproductive medicine, right? The thing, the challenges that people go through to have, you know, a child, but none of it's actually devoted, right, to what happens when that person becomes a human being, right, with thoughts, feelings, and emotions. So one of the long-term objectives that I have is to actually create a journal like in that space, like with my
clients. So I like that.
Yeah.
I think that it's needed. What research would you like to do next? Or are you working on your next research project?
Yeah, I'm currently working with a group of undergrads like at my university, and we're looking at feelings of betrayal of donor conceived people. So we're looking to see how their feelings of attachment, right, might predict how they experience, right, feelings of betrayal, things like that, and how their relationships might be impacted from this discovery. So yeah, I'm working on that. I also have work on lie detection. So trying to see like who's better, a better lie detector in this space. And I've actually found that replicated my dissertation finding, which is pretty cool. So it seems to be that people who are anxious. So again, these are people who tend to be preoccupied with relationships. They seem to be more biased to detect lies. So in the donor conceived, you know, reality, right? It might be the case that these are the kids that are really trying to do 23andMe, right? An ancestry. They're like, I feel like my parents might be lying to me. So they may be more attuned, right, to those things, like maybe nonverbals, and then trying to seek out, right, to get that answer. So
wow, that's all really fascinating. And like, to be honest, I've been thinking more big picture. I mean, you really are getting into the nitty-gritty of like who's more likely to do this and be, and that is fascinating. If money was like no issue and you had all the funding in the world and participants, because I'm sure that's also really hard to find. Oh, yeah. What is like the one thing that you would want to know an answer to or a study or a finding?
Ooh, that's a hard question because it's like that would want to know. I think the biggest thing is like cross-culturally what's happening, right? So not just in the US, right? But like other countries like Australia, right? The UK, there's so many different regulations, right? Depending on where you live. So I would want to see like, what are the psychological effects dependent on where you live? I think that that's really important. And also seeing like the context of the family dynamic, right? Are certain kids, right, more secure with their parents and like maybe another country? Because then that would allow us to see like, okay, what do we need to do, right? In terms of like setting these kids up for success? How do we actually help these, you know, kids actually live really good lives? So right. that would be the work that I would probably do.
That's really interesting. Is there a place that you think is doing this well?
I feel like no place is ever like perfect, but I would say like certain countries, yeah, the UK is like doing okay. And also Australia, there's like a lot of initiatives now and everything. So I would say, yeah, some places are doing way better.
Well, I find it interesting. Australia is kind of, and maybe things have changed recently, but I think it depends on like where you are in Australia. Cause I actually had a woman on who really was really excited to have her on because she was a mother who chose donor conception for her daughter. And you don't hear a lot of those stories because I think it's hard to be honest and to talk about because there's insecurities around it. But she found out, gosh, now I'm not going to be able to remember, but her daughter had well over 50 siblings. I want to say in the hundreds. And this is in Australia, which is supposed to be doing this much better. Yeah. And she was just really appalled and is really speaking against it now because she couldn't imagine having over 100, you know, siblings. And
psychologically, what does that do to people, right? To have that many siblings, that's a whole other thing.
And her daughter was still at the time, still young. So there was still a lot that, you know, her mom was working through with her. And she was, you know, very honest and trans, kind of in your case, you know, and her daughter was still really young. So there's still a lot to discover. But yeah, so it's like sometimes I hear that, you know, I think that we think other places are doing really well. But like, for example, surrogacy in places that are like altruistic only, you find out that you can get paid under the table quite handsomely. So it's really not as altruistic as the media presents or that, you know, the government presents it. It's actually
There's always an incentive, right? So it's like, are people actually doing this out of the kindness of their hearts or are they doing it for some other reason?
So. Right. Speaking of incentive, do you think there should be incentive for sperm and egg donors or what's your stance there?
I mean, I think that it really should be abolished. I take a very, a very strong stance on that. Like, I think that it's really challenging. And unless we actually had the appropriate supports in place, I don't think it's fair to people. Like, to even, I knew my whole life and I feel like I suffered trying to like really make sense of it. So I just think that it's not the best thing.
So you think egg and sperm donation absolutely should be just be done with?
I do. Yeah.
But it's hard. You want to work yourself out of a job.
Which I don't want to. I just want people to like live good lives. You know, that's the thing, you know? And I just know that so many people have struggled with this, whether or not they actually like come forward and they say that they do, they really do struggle on a deep level. So yeah.
And it's hard because I am not donor conceived, but again, I've talked to a few folks and it's like, on one hand, you don't want to say that you wish you didn't exist or that you wish, you know, you kind of are in this like catch 22 in that you don't support the industry, you don't support it. But at the same time, you're not saying, oh gosh, I wish my parents, I wish I wasn't here. I wish, you know, and certainly I wouldn't say that to anyone. I also, at the Center for Bioethics and Culture, we are also a prohibitive stance on it. We think it should also be prohibited. But that certainly doesn't mean that we don't think those people should exist and that we don't think that they have dignity and worth and et cetera. So it is, it's a little bit.
So grateful to have had the experience that I've had. And it's actually like, you know, manifested in terms of like what I do for a career and trying to help people. So there is a purpose to all of it. But yeah, it's very challenging, I think, for a lot of people. And there's not enough, you know, resources devoted, right, to helping people who are struggling. So,
So you would like to see it abolished. Are you doing any type of work? Again, I find that a lot of folks, and maybe not, you're already doing it so much as a professor and your research, but a lot of people kind of jump on the bandwagon of like starting to try to create laws or get things signed into Congress to help change things. Are you involved in that at all?
No, I wish I was some days because I'm like, I would definitely like to help out in that space. But again, time, you know, all of those
things. You are doing so much.
Also, though, I feel like that's part of the problem, though. So I'm very, you know, grateful that these individuals are really trying to spearhead these efforts. And I applaud them, right? But at the same time, I think that that's part of the issue, right? They're focusing on future ways to like help donor conceived people and families when really people are already affected. We need to help people now, right? In the present moment, because it's going to take a while for these things to happen, right? If they even will change.
Sure.
I'm very much of the stance of like, we need to help people now. And that's where the attention needs to be devoted.
Yeah. So. Yeah. And there are some organizations, including your own, that are doing that. I'm thinking of Wendy Kramer. She's doing work in that space. But and then your Conception Connection, which is wonderful because I think you're helping fill a need. Alicia, another gal I had on Venus Rising for this season, is doing work in that, in like the triage space. She's helping people kind of in that moment when they find out and they like head hits the floor. What did I just discover? So I think that that's great that there are people like you who are helping out. But I'm thinking of Colorado, where they enacted now that there's no anonymity, but that doesn't go into effect until like 2025 right. or something.
It's a while, yes. And it takes so long for these things to happen, you know. Part of me was, oh, I should go back to school and get a JD and then I can advocate for the rights. But I was like, yeah, enough grad school at this point.
But I think your research is going to be really important too, because you're finding things that we need to know about. And, you know, I know it takes so much time from bench to clinical or bench to practice. It's, you know, lab bench is what I'm kind of referring to. But from your studies to where it's actually being applied. But the research does need to be done because people don't understand. We're kind of taking fertility clinics at their word and saying like, oh, this is, you know, to have a family, this is what you need. And you got to sign up for this and it's okay. It'll all be all right. And nobody's really looking to see, is it going to be all right? Are the kids all right? Are they?
And the kids are not consenting. I think that's a major thing that people don't realize. Like the child is not consenting to live this life, you know? Right. So you really have to think about it before you actually act and make that decision.
Right. Exactly. Gosh, I could talk forever about this.
No, interesting. I love this.
Yeah. do you have, because we are close to time, I want to be respectful. I know you're so busy and I'm so excited for your research. Do you have anything else that we haven't talked about that you like burning in your head that you really want to say or bring up before we end our conversation?
I'm trying to think. I think we've mentioned a lot of the different things, you know, that I wanted to like, I was excited to talk about. But yeah, I think it just goes back to the donor is a parent. I feel like I cannot reiterate that enough. I really want people to understand, right, the immense, like, you know, decision that they're making, right? That this is a huge critical decision and that donor needs to have like some kind of contact with the child, right? I would even go as far as saying they should have a fully fledged relationship, you know, with the donor. But I know some people don't take that, you know, that they don't have that opinion. But I'm of the mindset that yes, that person should actually have contact and regular contact at that with the child.
Yeah. When you were saying that, the Sperminator and all of these men, because it's typically men, who are just like running around the world trying to create all these offspring through donation or insemination, like was going through my head. And it just completely disgusts me because I just think about the kids in this case and to know like, your biological father is just trying to create as many
children.
Yeah. as possible.
Seed, yeah. And evolutionary, like it makes a lot of sense, like with psychology, but at the same time, right? Like you're not realizing the implications of this also in small locations where people are dating perhaps one another related. So,
right. Well, and I just think too, like, yes, evolutionary, I must procreate, but I also, I don't know, part of me, I mean, I've called it out before in my writings. I just feel like there's a little bit of some sort of like mental health condition there. Most people don't think that way. And I'm not saying that just because most people do, that's the right thing or whatever, but it does seem like there needs to be some sort of evaluation there.
Maybe higher rates of narcissism or like rates. It could be that. I mean, it's possible.
Right. Anyway. It has been an absolute privilege to have you on the show today, Liz. Thank you so much for taking time out of your teaching and your research and your startup. What aren't you doing?
Thank you so much. Yeah. It's a pleasure speaking with you. So I've really enjoyed the conversation. So thank you. Yeah,
it's an important conversation. And like I said, for whatever reason, this season, we are just like really gearing up to talk about this issue. So I hope our listeners are enjoying it. And I just want to thank every listener and subscriber for tuning in. Our goal in this space is to create conversation, facilitate discussion, and encourage everyone to think beyond the masses. You can find out more about Liz at her personal website, Elizabeth, E-L-I-Z-A-B-E-T-H,
It has a middle initial, so it's B, and then Lozano.
Lozano. Okay, that's why I'm happy. So Elizabeth B. Lozano, and I'll spell that again, ELIZABETHBLOZANO.com. And then you can find her startup. If you know someone maybe that needs her resources or yourself, Conception Connection, you can find that at conceptionconnection.co. So thank you again, Liz. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Callie. Likewise. I appreciate it.
Of course. Thanks for listening to Venus Rising. If you like our show and want to know more, check us out at cbc-network.org. Leave us a review on iTunes, too, and join us next week for another conversation on fertility, infertility, and women's reproductive health.